on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Tuesday, May 27th, 2025. Now, hopefully you all had a relaxing weekend with your loved ones, with your friends, with your families, and did not lose sight of the sacrifices of all of those who gave their lives such that we can live in a country that provides us with opportunities to make ourselves better. And so that is really what this show is about. Trying to make ourselves better. In our case, here at InvestTalk, we think that becoming more educated about, by paying more attention to, by being able to sort through more of the noise, the stories, the drivers, that we can become better, more informed investors. And so we meet here almost each and every day. Certainly we take holidays off. We're not crazy. But the point and the goal is the same. Now, in order to do that, we bring you educational items. We bring you actionable items. But more importantly, most importantly, we answer your finance and investment questions through your live calls, through your voicemails, through the questions you leave us in the comment section of our YouTube channel and in our iTunes review section. And so with that being said, before we take a look at today's market performance, before we run down those show topics I brought to the table today, let's tackle this caller question now.
I'm calling today about WMB. Hoping you guys can take a look at that. Let me know if you think it's too expensive. Hope you guys had a nice Memorial Day. Have a good day. Bye.
Ticker WMB is Williams Companies. And Williams Companies, headquartered in Oklahoma, it is a infrastructure company that specializes in natural gas processing and transportation, primarily operating within the United States. If you look at a breakdown of their geographic segment, look at that. 100% of its revenue comes from the United States. Now, it's a fairly large company, about $72 billion market cap, with a little bit of debt, though not too much, only about $27.4 billion in debt. Story of its cash flow over the past couple of years has been pretty solid, up from just over $3 billion to about $5 billion now. And in the past couple of years as well, their margins have fallen a little bit, but still high relative to the rest of the industry. Their net margin hit a peak in 2023, about 32.9%, dipped back down below to 20.7%, projected to grow again to 21.8% this year. Now, from a performance perspective, it's done pretty solid over the past year, I would say, up 49.76% on the past 52 weeks, up 11% year to date. And what has really driven that is something that we can't really see right here because now we're looking at our estimates. But their Q1 earnings were pretty solid. Earnings per share, 60 cents. Beat analyst expectations of 55 cents. Revenue for the quarter was $3 billion. Beat projections of $2.9 billion. Apologies. Reason why? Well, natural gas has had quite a run as it has gone hand in hand with the AI secular growth theme because of the massive demand for power. And so because of this, the question is, can that revenue growth be sustained? Now, this isn't necessarily a grower of a name, right? It's a solid name. It pays a dividend yield, 3.3%. Not what you'd expect in some of those names that are trading at high multiples, but this is trading at a pretty high multiple. 26.1 times forward-looking earnings. 5.8 times price to book. 14 times price to cash flow. And my cat, if you can hear her, is correct. That is pretty high. And so, you know, I think the question becomes, as you see some companies that are pulling back from production of data centers, you saw that from Microsoft a couple weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago at this point, will the demand for natural gas continue? Will the demand for energy continue? I don't see how it couldn't. But just because Demand should be high in the years to come. Does it mean that you're getting into a name at a price that is relatively high? I think it's a little bit expensive. Right now, they do have a pretty extensive pipeline network. And I do like the fact that they are focusing on growing that quarterly dividend. Either way, it has had quite the run-up in the past 6 months or so. It looks like it's finally starting to consolidate in the 55 to 60 range, but certainly, you know, NVIDIA earnings has always been a big part of what drives anything that is touched by AI. And so we will get that tomorrow, I believe. Should be a harbinger for the industry as a whole to see what the demand is, because certainly you need those chips, you need to build those data centers, and then you get the power demand. So for now, I'd hold off. I'd see if it continues to consolidate, that is, at where it is, around $60 per share. And we're getting earnings in about a week anyway. So certainly that will tell us a lot. Guidance will look a lot. Hold off for now. Be patient. As always, tend to not like trading within 2 weeks of earnings. That is Williams Companies, ticker WMB. Great company, little expensive. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you today. My main focus point concerns this topic: how to retire with little savings. Even with limited savings, you can still retire, perhaps even comfortably, but it's important to assess your finances. Explore part-time work and downsizing, maximize retirement contributions, maybe even do a little bit more. Also, we'll touch on why the calls, some might say the speculation, the warnings, if you will, that AI is going to take your job. Maybe we need to take a step back. Why hasn't it taken your job yet? We'll also touch on how investors are shifting away from US bond markets on fears of the president's policies and more towards international bond markets. We talked about this with the euro denominated bonds by US companies going up recently. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on a deal that may finally be here for US Steel and Nippon Steel, a Japanese steel company, and what the US government might get out of that. We also have some voice bait questions ready to play, including one on Civitas Resources Inc., ticker CIVI, and another on how to determine how you should set a limit order. As always, we will also be answering some of the questions that we got from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're headed into a break, and on the other side, we're going to be talking about the big positive day in the market. We're going to go through the focus point. We're going to go through all sorts of things, as always, here on Invest Talk.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
That is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99 Shark.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. A very positive day today, pretty broadly as well. The Dow up 1.78%, S&P 500 up 2.05%, NASDAQ up 247, and the Russell 2000 up 248. As I mentioned, broadly higher. Big tech, very much leading the way today. Tesla, the notable gainer out of that core group. Other outperformers included airlines, travel tourism, casual diners, apparel, and apparel retailers. Apparel and apparel retailers having a rough month or so leading into days like today. Few groups were really in the red, so relative underperformers included managed care, HBCs, beverages, tobacco, and precious metal miners. Underperformers on the day makes sense because why? Well, gold was down 1.9% on the day. Dollar index up 40 basis points on the day, and crude oil settling down just about 1%, though it was trading, I would say, significantly lower at one point throughout the day. Not a lot of tailwinds. Fairly quiet session, not a lot of news flow on the day. Over the weekend, we did get the headline that the president would be delaying the 50% tariff on the EU by just over a month, stretching that deadline now, which was supposed to be in June, to the 9th of July. We also got some positivity out of the US economic calendar, a relatively bright spot with a sharp jump in May consumer confidence, primarily driven by those trade deal hopes. That rebound coming after about 5 months of straight declines. The release also noting that the additional momentum was, again, from that de-escalation from between the US and China. But at the same time, you're seeing the labor market differential continuing to deteriorate. So you're seeing respondents being more positive about what is going on with trade, but still saying jobs are pretty hard to get. We got April headline durable goods, which is down 6.3% month over month. That sounds like a big decline, and it is, but it did decline less than expected. Core capital goods down larger than expected, though, at 1.3%, the lowest level we've seen since September of 2022. But the big thing this week is the Treasury supply. We got a lot of auctions. Today we have the $69 billion two-year auction, pretty well received. Tomorrow, which is Wednesday, we'll see a $70 billion sale of fives and a $44 billion sale of sevens. Again, very critical to see what is going on with Treasury auctions, with demand internally, domestic demand, international demand, especially given how the bond market's been moving over the past couple weeks. Alrighty, let's get straight to a question that came into our comment section over there on our YouTube channel. If you're interested, we break up the show into different segments. Maybe you want to listen to our podcast and then head over to the InvestTalk YouTube and rewatch the questions we answer, because you want to take a look at the charts that we use to give you a better idea of what we're talking about and why we're saying it. And while you're over there, if you leave a question in the comments section, we love tackling those. This one came in from Jimmy Gustafson, and it's a question related to relocating some of his portfolio from the US to Europe. It says, I've relocated some of my portfolio from the US to Europe, and especially to Sweden, where I'm from. I still find the US market very interesting. I still have some positions, but not around 40% as before. It's around 10 to 15% for the moment. Anyway, with the wars and the uncertain times we're living in, is it pretty likely that companies in the defense business will do pretty well? Well, first and foremost, I do want to say that although I am very much in favor of international diversification, if you're looking at a global portfolio, 10 to 15% in the US, that's a dramatic underweight. The United States historically has been between 50 and 70% of the global market. And so if you're taking 10 to 15%, you're over 50% underweight what the market is as a whole. You're also potentially suffering from one of the cognitive biases of investing called home bias. You mentioned it. Most of your portfolio is in Sweden. Because you are from there. Investors tend to concentrate their portfolios in the countries in which they're located. For US investors, that's not as big of a problem because of the size of the US market relative to the rest of the world. If you're from Sweden, however, that could be a problem, so you want to be careful with that. Now, that being said, uncertain times we're living in, companies in the defense business may be doing pretty well. Well, if we take a look at how, let's take a US business, for example, take a look how Lockheed Martin has been doing year to date. At the beginning of the year, they weren't doing particularly well because you had the scrutiny of DOGE, which ended up really not doing much at all to cut spending, right? Spending is up. But either way, I do think that with uncertainty, especially in Europe, if you're looking for European defense contractors, I think that's a great area for growth because Europe is, in a way, being forced to become more insular. They want to spend more on their own weapons manufacturers. And so, be it in the U.S., where you've seen the recovery of some of these defense contractors, as we've seen, the Pentagon budget is certainly not going to be cut. And with that, more insular culture in Europe, I think defense contractors are a pretty solid way to go for the long term. Now, we're headed into a break. Still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your voicemail questions. And of course, you can call me now at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number. We haven't heard from anyone yet, but we would certainly love to hear from you today. But before we do, let's dive right into my main focus point, which is about a topic that people are often concerned with. Because even if you are on track for a proper amount of savings for your retirement, a lot of people don't feel that way. In fact, only 47% of people, as surveyed by BlackRock, feel as though they're on track for their retirement. 60% fear that they are likely to outlive their retirement savings. So this is highlighting the widespread anxiety in the phase of life in which you're supposed to be accumulating and the need for potentially shifting your strategic plan for retirement. Before you do that, the first thing you need to do is, where am I? You have to take a look at your financial inventory, your balances of your 401ks, your bank accounts, your IRAs, your brokerage holdings. What is your debt? What do you have to pay every month? Are you living beyond your means? Build a realistic budget to create that baseline that we can then build off of to see if we need to make improvements, if we need to make tough decisions. Now, when you're thinking about drawing down those savings in retirement, a general guideline industry-wide has been the 4% rule, because for a 30-year retirement, 4% has historically been a decent enough drawdown rate such that you do not run out of money. It also, though, is only as good as the assumptions you have. It doesn't include Social Security, but it also is predicated upon the idea that your spending is steady, which may not match reality. Why? Well, maybe you want to go on more vacations early. You're excited about retirement. Maybe, more realistically, as you get older, there are more costs associated, retrofitting your house for old age, all sorts of things that people do not think about. Now, once you've done that, if you find that there is this gap, how might you think about filling it? One way is part-time work. Now, it doesn't sound fun, but if you are at a point where it is necessary, it's something you may have to do. You may want to downsize your home. Maybe you grew up raising your kids in your adulthood in a home that is no longer necessary in terms of size. Maybe your family of six is now a family of two because your kids are all grown up. Well, then it might be time for you to downsize. Now, once you've all done that, it's important to note that if you can wait to draw down on your Social Security, it will grow. Benefits grow by 8% annually past full retirement age, up to the age of 70. And so this can be a pretty powerful income booster if you have the opportunity to delay using it, but only if it's viable. Now, one thing that everybody should think about way before they even get to retirement is that workers 50 plus can contribute more to their retirement accounts, $8,000 to their IRAs and up to $31,000 to their 401ks as of 2025, because the Secure 2.0 Act boosted those limits even further as soon as you get to the age 60 and 63. So these catch-up contributions can really play an important role if you weren't able to save enough earlier in your career. Now, for those of you who have a home and you may not want to downsize, but you need money in the interim, you can tap that home equity. We also live in a world where you don't have to go somewhere to work anymore. And so maybe you're specialized. Maybe you have institutional knowledge within the industry that you've been in. Well, given the growth of remote work, this could be an excellent option for income as well. And the reason why this is important is not only because it's about you and your future and your lives, but because costs are, I don't know if you know this, costs are rising. Healthcare, housing, inflation, they're all putting pressure on my budget, on our listeners' budgets, on everyone's budget, and especially on retirees' budgets. And so creating these alternative sources of income, thinking about a smart withdrawal strategy, thinking about how, based upon where you are now, if you can save more than you have been before, is more crucial than it has ever been. I am giving you this advice, and it's a checklist of advice. But the reality is that retirement, it's personal. It's not formulaic. Everybody's situation, every single person's situation is different. So those steps, assess where you are, assess where you need to go, think about what you can do to get there. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story behind this headline, Three Measures of Risk That Affect Your Portfolio. When we discuss this, we'll be discussing how we can learn about the different types of risks, such as market, inflation, and interest rate risk, and how those things all impact your portfolio and why understanding them is crucial for making those informed investment decisions. That's tomorrow, but now, for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls. And you know what? I'm getting lonely. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Ken from Michigan. Hoping you can give me your advice on what to do with Civita. I know it was something you guys were pretty bullish on at one point, but I'm down probably close to 50% in that position right now. And I'm wondering what your outlook is on Civita. Should I hold on to that, or should I just cut my losses and move on to a better opportunity at this point? Thank you.
Ticker CIVI, Civitas Resources, Inc. is an exploration production company that focuses on acquisition and development and production of crude oil and natural gas liquids. Now, when you take a look at its business breakdown, right, 84% of its business comes from crude oil. And since February, the name is down a lot. It's down about 37.1% year-to-date, down 24.75% in the past 3 months. And the reason why primarily isn't because it's not operationally doing well. It's not because its balance sheet isn't bad, right? Its cash flow has grown in the past 3 years significantly. Look at this down here. Its margins, still pretty solid, though dipping down below what we saw in 2022. Now, its balance sheet is a little rough now in terms of, its debt to equity is a little bit rougher now given the drawdown in the price, right? It's got about $4-5 billion in debt on a $2.5 billion company. But its interest coverage ratio is about 3x, meaning that the interest on its debt isn't really weighing down too much on the company. Now, we still do own it in one of our strategies. And one of the reasons why is because, well, their revenue hasn't really suffered all that much, right? In the first quarter, their revenue beat earnings estimates. The main driver of this has been what is driving the industry more broadly lower. And because this is a small cap name, it's being affected more by it. And so if you can take the long view, if you can take and stomach the long view, the volatility, you can potentially see a lot of growth here. But if that's not the type of investor you are, then that's perfectly fine. If you want to get oil exposure when oil is trading at the lows and you can't stomach the volatility that you can see in some of these small mid-cap names, then maybe a large cap oil play makes more sense for you. That is Civitas Resources, ticker CIVI. Let's go with two in a row. This one came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And it's about Canadian mutual funds. It says, hey, I have had two Canadian mutual funds on my watch list that I would like to start adding to my portfolio. The first one is the Fidelity Canadian Opportunities Fund and the TD Canadian Small Cap Equity Fund. Do you believe these funds would be a good investment for the medium and long term? Also, which one would you prefer? Thanks, and we'll be listening to your answer on the podcast. All right, let's take a look at these. Hopefully they come up here. So let's take a look at the Fidelity Canadian Opportunities Fund first. Oh, nothing on this one. Lovely. Okay. Let's type in a different ticker here, see if we get something for you. FID615. Nope, nothing. Let's look at a different share class now. This is sometimes when you get to see that we really do this show live. It's not always easy sometimes. Various share classes, complexities looking into these things. See if we can get any information on a different share class. Not so much. Well, let's take a look at the other one. The TD Canadian Small Cap Equity Fund. Nothing there either. Well, unfortunately, this is sometimes how it goes. Sometimes it's a lot more difficult to get information on mutual funds. And so generally speaking, I am at a high level, say that I think getting Canadian exposure is a good thing. What I would do, however, is more likely go with an ETF that has higher liquidity, tighter spreads, and more tax efficient. Sorry we couldn't look at your two funds. Hopefully we'll be able to circle back to this. Thanks for watching. Well, because that didn't work too well, let's go with a caller question, this one on setting a limit order.
I was wondering, when you find a company you're interested in buying into, what methods do you use to determine a good price to set your limit order? Thanks for everything you do, and I'll be listening to your response on the podcast. Bye.
So that's a great question. And so for us, because we are buying individual companies, because we don't have urgency, we have the ability to wait. And so when we look at companies, we are assessing their balance sheet, we're assessing their fundamentals, but at a high level, we're looking at, because we're value investors, how oriented towards value it is. What are its profitability characteristics and how has it been performing relative to the rest of the market? And you can call those all sorts of other things. We can call them value, prof, and momentum. But for us, when you're looking at the price range of where you want to buy a company, if it falls within the, let's say, constraints that we want to see, that it's within a various value bucket, it has a solid profitability, and it is up momentum, well, then for us, it already is falling within that target price for us. And because we can be more patient and be more flexible, we can enter positions more slowly. Now, that helps in times of volatility when markets are going up crazy some days, but also down crazy the other days. Having a more measured approach to entering a position can certainly be more beneficial. Now, if you have a different investment strategy, there could be various reasons why you may want to enter different limit orders. Maybe you're just trading, you're not investing. Well, then you should probably have really tight limit orders. Maybe you are, have a lot of urgency. It is more time sensitive. Well, then maybe you shouldn't have a limit order that is too constraining. In general, it depends on what type of strategy you're trying to execute. For us, because the companies that we are looking at generally fall within the categories of things we would want to buy, we slowly enter positions once we consider them to be eligible for the strategy. Thanks for the call. Now, for quite some time, there has been fear on the rise that AI is going to take all of our jobs. You can see it. Google searches for AI unemployment are at an all-time high. And the anxiety isn't just within people who work in tech. And it's not no longer just emanating from the tech space. It is all over. From London to San Francisco to New York to everywhere in between. Pundits are claiming that job losses are starting to pile up, but the data just doesn't support that. In fact, Oxford did some research and they saw that automation reduced the demand for translators, yet U.S. employment of translators rose 7% year over year. Klarna, a company we have for quite some time been pretty bearish on, Klarna decided a while back, okay, we are going to replace customer service with chatbots, AI chatbots. We are going to cut down, make a move for profitability. How did that work? Well, despite the initial hype, they are now saying they are moving back towards a human option, signaling a retreat from full automation. Some people say, okay, well, with the rise of AI, new graduates are having a tough time finding work. But that's been the case since 2009. So that's been the case since the wake of the financial crisis. This isn't a new thing. Long before the rise of generative AI, the trend of recent graduates being less likely to be employed than the average worker has been increasing. White-collar jobs remaining relatively stable. There has been some talk of AI coming for consulting and for banking and for finance. And certainly there have been some cutbacks at companies, but there is no indication that there is any difference between that and normal pushes for efficiency. Look at the unemployment rate. Overall, unemployment is pretty low, 4.2%, low by historical standards, at about full employment. Now, you'd think that if you didn't have bargaining power because AI could easily take your job, that you wouldn't see wages rising. But wages are rising. Globally, the job picture is pretty strong. It's not just within the US. In Europe, employment is at record high. Wage growth is healthy across Europe, in Britain, in Japan. And so AI adoption still at this point seems pretty limited. Less than 10% of US firms use artificial intelligence. Not just in their roles of customer service, but I'm talking about in core production here. And that's per some official data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And so it's something that I think I've been saying for quite some time here. And that is that AI is a productivity tool, especially where it stands now. And so if you can learn to utilize its capabilities, which I use in my daily job, things that make my life easier, if I am doing some coding because I have a knowledge of how to code, you can debug faster than I can if you're a computer. You can make suggested changes based upon what I am looking for more quickly. And so for now, what we've seen is AI being a productivity tool, not a replacement tool. Now, I'm not saying that that is going to be how it is forever. It is certainly possible that the technology gets to a point that it is replacing workers. The only point that I'm trying to make is that we are not there yet. The AI-themed job apocalypse is not upon us. Before it gets here, for anyone out there listening who is in the labor force, I think the best thing to do would be to learn to use it to your benefit. Looks like we got a live call. Craig from Seattle, how can we help you today?
Hey, Luke. Appreciate you taking my call. Actually, you had answered one, part of this question originally. I had, with your Avantis and Dimensional background, so my two largest holdings in my Roth IRA and my brokerage – are AVGE and DFAW, and you had noted that they're managed differently enough that it makes sense to have both for diversification. But I'm curious your thoughts on VT, Vanguard's total world with, you know, almost 10,000 equities in it. Is that just too much duplication and conservative? Should I just take what I have in that and split it between the DFAW and AVGE? Pretty high risk tolerance, retired, no debt.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So you are naming two different classes of funds here. So the Dimensional Fund and the Avantis Fund are going to be actively managed. Now, we don't think about active management traditionally within the ETF space in the way that they mean it, which is right. They are actively doing tilts. And so you start with your investable universe, right? Let's say it's, in this case, the globe. And then Avantis and Dimensional within their funds are going to say, okay, we start with the globe, but we know that empirically some securities, high growth, small caps, no profitability, tend to underperform. So we will underweight those and overweight other names. And so what you end up with is not a market cap weighted strategy, right? It's an active fund. Now, on the other side, you got VT, which is the Vanguard Total World Stock ETF. It's a 6 basis point fund. It's super cheap, but it's passively managed. And so if you're telling me that you have more of a higher risk tolerance, meaning you can stomach losses, but also take part in some of the benefits, higher expected returns, then I think it makes sense for you to maybe be more invested in those active global funds that are still relatively cheap, those Avantis funds, those Dimensional funds, because over longer periods of time, what they're tilting towards empirically have outperformed. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and my two largest holdings in both the brokerage and the Roth IRA are AVGE and DFAW. My third largest holding is all that is the ABGV, and then the fourth largest is ABUV. So very value tilted, high risk, obviously. And I just thought VT would be a bit more conservative, but broader.
It is a lot more conservative. Yeah, it is a lot more conservative. Yeah. I just think that, you know, if it's, again, it's about fitting your risk tolerance. And certainly from what you're saying, your risk tolerance seems higher than just having a market cap weighted passive fund of, you know, X thousands amount of securities. You know, if you wanted to have it as a safer conservative portion of your portfolio that will steadily grow as global market cap grows, I think that's perfectly reasonable. It's 6 basis point fund. It's super cheap. But I'm just trying to match what I've heard about you in terms of your risk tolerance to the investments that you have. And so, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And certainly if it's a smaller part, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, call anytime, Craig. Thanks for calling. Well, you can be like Craig and you can give me a call. But if you want to do that, you're going to have to do that within the next 10 minutes because this is our final break. As always, this is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
It's Art from Tucson. I'm calling about Toro Company, TTC. Wondering if this is a good time to pick up some more shares. Should wait a while or... The story on this company and stock has changed to the unfavorable. Would love to hear your opinion on it. Thanks a lot. Listen on the podcast.
So let's take a look at TTC. That is the Toro Company. And the Toro Company is an outdoor environment, turfing, landscaping, maintenance, snow and ice management, irrigation business. Their business is pretty evenly split, I would say, across their... Oh, I'm sorry. It's not evenly split. I don't know why I would say that. It's about 78% split between their professional division and their residential division. And they have a decent chunk of change outside the U.S. as well, though 80% of their business comes from the U.S. Now, its revenue growth is pretty decent over the past 5-6 years, growing about 7.9% on an annualized basis. It's a $7 billion market cap company. It's got very little debt, $1.225 billion in debt. And it pays a decent dividend, about 2% dividend yield, which is relatively constant over the past couple years, though it used to be around 1% back in 2021. Now, on the positive side, its cash flow is improving. Its profitability is improving as well as margins, though dipping down in 2021, kind of growing back in the opposite direction as well. It's about 7.3% net margin in 2023, 9.1% net margin in 2024, projected to be about 9.3% this year. It's also cheaper than it's been for quite some time, perhaps because it's down about 8.8% over the past year, down about 5% year to date, though it is up 2.69% as of yesterday. Now, from an earnings perspective, it's done a pretty solid job, right? They recorded their first quarter earnings. They surpassed analyst expectations. Their dividend was declared at 36 cents per share as their quarterly dividend. But for right now, the analysts are giving it a consensus hold rating. But I don't necessarily agree with them, right? We own this name for investors. It has a diversified product portfolio. It has a global reach, something that I certainly do like. It goes from about 80-20, right? United States internationally. So you do get a little bit of international exposure there. And so keeping in mind that, you know, from a technical perspective, it doesn't look as strong as it has, right? It's on a little bit of a downtrend since, oh, about July. We certainly think that it is a solid business. It has a decent balance sheet, and it's starting to grow again while buying back shares. And so if you understand the volatility and you can stomach it, this could be a good time to buy a name that has been cheaper, or that is cheaper than it has been in quite some time. That is Toro Company, ticker TTC. So last week, we spoke about how companies are diversifying away from issuing U.S.-denominated bonds and moving into the euro space. And so, too, are big investors. There has been concern that maybe the treasury market will lose its safe haven status. I certainly don't think we're there yet. The dollar has been under pressure, down close to 8% year-to-date, though it did gain again today. And rising yields are spooking investors, right? Yields were down again today. But at the same time, the 30-year treasury yield surged past 5.1% at one point. The 10-year was above 4.5%. And so you see this understandable shift towards Europe, towards Japan, towards Australia, as concerns for U.S. debt sustainability become widespread, are lit on fire, deficits projected to stay at 6 to 7% of GDP with the supply of treasuries rising. And so you have to ask, is this a new global bond core emerging that people will not just invest in the US, but they will, for the first time in quite some time, start to lump the US in with the other developed countries in the world? And so as fiscal expansion and political risks are mounting from administration policy, from trade policy, from the vast amount of debt that we are set to take on should this budget pass, is a permanent permanent repricing underway? Only time will tell. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, where we'd really appreciate a rate and review. If today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's all really working together, let's talk. At KBP Financial, we offer no-cost, free portfolio reviews. If you're interested, head over to investtalk.com and hit portfolio review. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, And your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.